You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Lux Pharmacist Podcast, a place where individuality, passion, and dedication are right at home. Here for those of you who are seeking inspiration and chasing their dreams and insights into the day-to-day life of a modern woman in pharmacy. Your host is an entrepreneurial pharmacist, a pharmacy advocate, and founder of the Lux Pharmacist. Welcome to the Lux Pharmacist Podcast, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Everyone, welcome to another residency series episode on the Lux Pharmacist Podcast. I know match day is quickly approaching, so I just wanted to take a step back and kind of go over my entire residency journey for you guys. So how I first got interested into a residency all the way through the application process, and yes, match day itself in phase two and all of the good things. So if we rewind all the way to what I call my third year, which was really my P1 year, I remember that as the year that I knew I wanted to do a residency. And I think it was really me just falling in love with the classes that I was taking in that particular clinical pharmacy field. So it was classes like therapeutics and pharmacology. I loved that critical thinking process, or that problem solving process, or having to know all these different things about the medication and the body and the patient specifically to help make the best drug therapy choice for their condition and for that patient. And that I just absolutely loved. There's obviously, you know, fields within clinical pharmacy that I think I liked the most, cardiology and diabetes and all those things being some of them, and, you know, others like ID not really being part of what I originally fell in love with, but it was definitely that, or those classes, I should say, that really made me decide on doing a residency. I knew that I wanted to be someone who was working through those problems and was also working side by side those other clinical providers to help make those choices for those patients. So that is 100% where my kind of desire to pursue a residency stemmed from. And then we kind of think, what next, right? So if you're someone who has recently decided that you do want to pursue a residency in the future, you know, what are all of those things that you can be doing to help prepare you for that? And I think this is going to look very different person to person, just based on, you know, what we all enjoy the most and what we're good at and maybe what we need to work on. So I am going to walk you guys through what I did to prepare for a residency. Even, you know, a couple of years ago, I knew that they were very competitive to get. And I think that may have just increased. You know, I'm not sure. Obviously, I didn't know that much about residency back then. But I had heard that it was competitive. And I know that it is still, to this day, competitive. So, you know, there definitely are things that if you really do want to pursue a residency, there are things that you should be doing early on in your pharmacy school career, or, you know, obviously, as soon as you do decide that you do want to do one. Being a good residency candidate is really all about being well-rounded, and that is definitely one of the first things that I realized kind of starting off in that process of preparing for a residency. And one of the big kind of misconceptions is that you have to have a 4.0 or a 3.9 or a 3.8 or whatever it will be. You know, whatever you have that number in your head, to be a good residency candidate. And that was really hard for me to kind of get over, because I was someone who cared about my grades so much, and wanted to have, you know, the best grades that I could. And that kind of stems from, you know, what I went through in high school and kind of not being able to have that. So I was someone who had really good grades when I graduated, but I kept hearing, you know, throughout school as I was preparing for residency that GPA wasn't everything. And it wasn't really until I kind of got out onto rotations that I realized that that was true. But there is kind of a caveat to that. So what this really means is that You have to think about it from the institution's perspective. You know, do you want to hire someone who all they do is study, 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 and they have a 3.9 or a 4.0? Or do you want the person who's in a bunch of organizations and works and has great leadership skills and has a 3.5 or a 3.6? Or again, the numbers aren't really important, but you get what I'm saying. If you're someone who can do both, more power to you. I know that I was one of them, but it took a ton of work. But if you are studying super, super hard and you're not getting the grades that you think you need to get, I just want you guys to know that there's no perfect number. And it really is more just about you as a well-rounded candidate overall versus looking at someone's GPAs. I promise you that no one in the residency process is looking at people and ranking them based on GPA alone or anything crazy like that. It really is just all about being well-rounded. So that's kind of the first thing that you need to get out of your head in this whole process. Another important thing to realize is that there are a million different things that you could be doing, and you don't necessarily need to have the same path as your roommate or your best friend or your peers. It's all about becoming a well-rounded future pharmacist, but also staying true to yourself. Because, you know, pharmacy school is a lot of work. Volunteering and putting yourself through all this extra stuff is also a lot of work. So you want to make sure that you're doing things that you truly, truly enjoy. So again, there are a million different things that you could be doing. And I'm sure there's going to be things that you have done or you've seen other people do that I didn't necessarily do. So I'm just kind of, you know, giving you guys what I did. But I was highly involved in organizations, and that is something that I did early on in my P1 year when I kind of knew I wanted to do a residency. I signed up for a bunch of different organizations and kind of, you know, felt out where I fit in best and what I wanted to get the most involved with. So I was highly involved with ACCP for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years. I also did a lot of stuff with ASHP and APHA, even though I never formally served on those e-boards, but I did for ACCP. And I was so highly involved in organizations that I actually also got into our Leadership Honor Society on campus, which is Phi Lambda Sigma. Your school may have it, your school may not. And I know a lot of schools do it a different way in terms of like the application process. But at my school, we have a very traditional Phi Lambda Sigma. So we have to apply with an application and then an interview process. And then the peers of ours who are currently in Phi Lambda Sigma actually vote and choose the next incoming class. So it was a huge honor for me. And it was something that once I was in it, I got a lot of great experience out of that, you know, just from interviewing the next set of candidates to, you know, volunteering and creating events in that organization. I actually served as vice president 1 year. So another important thing is once you get involved in certain things, it actually opens up a lot more doors for you, and you can kind of keep expanding on yourself as a future pharmacist and a leader and all those things. So it's really important, you know, even if it feels overwhelming at first, just to kind of get your foot in the door and get started, because it opens up so many more opportunities that you can even imagine. So I was very highly involved in organizations. I loved volunteering. I always felt like I got so much more out of volunteering than even the people I was helping, because it just made me feel so good to, you know, be able to give back to others. So that is something I also did. One of the more unique things I think I did was I actually did a lot of research. So my summer before my P2 year, I actually had reached out to one of our pharmacology professors at the time, who has a million degrees and is a genius. And I actually did a lot of benchtop research with him over the summer with his PhD students. And it wasn't even really anything super pharmacy heavy. It was very more pharmacology heavy, you know, PCR and rats and all of this cool stuff that, you know, at the time I didn't really understand. But then the very next semester we had our pharmaceutical biotechnology class, and we talked about so many of the things that I had seen and done in that lab. So it gave me a really good perspective when I was learning that stuff. But it also, I think, just shows that I was willing to, you know, do work over the summer and be exposed to new things. So any kind of research that you can get involved in, is really amazing as well. I know we had like this huge program called SURF at our school for, you know, research and things like that. So that is a great avenue to pursue as well. Obviously, having some kind of an internship is also amazing. My dream in pharmacy school, like my absolute dream, was to get a hospital internship, and I never got one. I worked at CVS for a couple of years, and then I ended up stopping sometime in my fourth year. So that would have been my P2 year, like late within my P2 year. And then after that, I was just very involved in organizations. But that is always something that I felt was like a shortcoming of mine because I didn't have that. And again, looking back on it, I had a bunch of other things. So again, I don't think one area, if you're lacking in one area, I don't think that that necessarily hurts you in any way. I think it's all about being well-rounded. So if you're lacking in a ton of areas, then that may be an issue. But if you don't have one or two things that you feel like are the end of the world, I promise you they're not. It's really about the bigger picture. And the other thing I will say is think outside of the box. I mean, if you don't see an opportunity that you want, create it. I know someone who literally started a new organization at my school. How cool is that? You know, if you have a passion and you don't see an organization, you know, reach out about starting one. Also, don't limit yourself to pharmacy. I know a lot of people who, you know, were president of the Catholic Society or something. So, you know, if you're religious or you have other interests, go after those organizations too. It doesn't have to be just limited to pharmacy. Again, it's all about being, you know, a personable, well-rounded individual. Also, speaking of outside of the box, my very first podcast episode or my blog was things that I talked about in certain interviews if I felt comfortable doing so. So, you know, whatever it is that you're pursuing outside of pharmacy or related to pharmacy or whatever it may be, you know, don't feel weird about talking about that if it's a passion that you have. And you know, anything that you feel like you're growing from, that's all, you know, time well spent. So be creative in the things that you do. Again, it's all about being well-rounded, and it's also about, you know, standing out from our peers, because we are so alike and we do go through all the same classes. And you know, it's really about setting yourself apart as well at the end of the day. The next really important thing that I think everyone needs to take into consideration if they are wanting to pursue a residency is their appy rotation. So I think that appy rotations are actually kind of similar to doing a residency. Obviously, you know, you're there at the hospital or the clinic every single day working up and seeing patients or rounding with the team, etc., depending on what type of rotation you're on. So residencies also have rotations. You know, you get projects and you get extra work and homework and topic discussions and presentations. Again, residencies have all those things. It might be harder and it might be more work in residency. And, you know, again, it's your name on everything because you're now licensed and you probably have to staff, etc. So there's extra things, but appies are kind of like a nice trial run, I want to say, to kind of really prepare you for a residency. So with that being said, I approached rotations in the sense that I wanted to have clinical challenging rotations. You know, I wanted to kind of get the best or the most out of that time. So I purposely tried to sign up for what I thought would be the best rotations to get me that experience. The other thing is don't be afraid to tell your preceptors that you are pursuing a residency. You know, a lot of mine asked me in the beginning when we were kind of getting to know each other. Another thing is that if it is someone who you want to end up writing you a letter of recommendation, you know, your entire time together is kind of like an interview because they are going to be speaking about how you were as a student on those rotations. So it really is, you know, a time to shine and take on extra work and volunteer for things, to obviously get to know your preceptors better, but just to grow as a person and as a student. So For anyone who doesn't know, I had a longitudinal rotation at Yale, so I had a lot of my clinical rotations at Yale. I also had a really great ambulatory care rotation that was at a Dartmouth site in New Hampshire, where I'm from. So I had a lot of really good challenging rotations, which helped. But I also, you know, did the absolute best that I could on those rotations, and I got really good letters of recommendation from doing that. So again, you really need to treat it as kind of like a mini residency run, but also, as you know, the entire time you're spending with that preceptor is like an interview for them writing you a letter of recommendation. So very, very important to take those rotations seriously. And then looking at the application process itself, everything kind of really ramps up in the fall time. As soon as forecast opens, you're really hitting the ground running with, you know, your CV and letters of intent and letters of rec, and there is just so much to do, and I know how overwhelming it can seem. So one of the first things that my boyfriend and I did is we agreed on where we were going to apply, or not necessarily agreed, like we didn't have to apply to the same places, but we kind of mapped out where we wanted to be next year. And we both made the personal choice to kind of also put our personal lives at the forefront. And we decided to only apply in Connecticut and, you know, try and live at home and just really focus on us two as a couple. And for us, I think, especially for me, for someone who was planning on doing a residency for so long, you know, I didn't want to give up anything. But in our state, in Connecticut, there are so many hospitals and so many residency programs, and so many of them were amazing. So I really didn't feel like I was missing out on anything by doing that, but it did obviously affect my application process. You know, I wasn't traveling to look at other locations. I wasn't looking at hospitals out of the state. My list was very narrowed, and where I wanted to be was very narrowed. So that kind of helped me in a lot of ways, because I wasn't trying to weed through a million programs. So again, that's just a personal choice that we made. And your residency application process may look completely different, and you may be someone who is open to the entire country. And in my previous episodes, kind of, I talk more about how to narrow down, you know, different programs you may want to apply to, but I was someone who applied very, very locally. And I actually kind of even took it a step further, because I only applied to 4 places in phase one. So I really, really, really narrowed my list down to the places that, you know, just on paper alone, I thought I would absolutely love. And if I could go back and change anything, I think I would have definitely applied to more places in phase one, just to get a better idea of, you know, what else was out there. I know that the residency program I'm in right now, I absolutely love. And had I, you know, interviewed there in phase one and ranked them and loved it, you know, obviously I love being there now, so I don't see why I wouldn't have, you know, maybe I would have matched in phase one. And we'll talk about, you know, phase two in a little bit, but I don't really necessarily have regrets in anything that I did. But I think that, you know, if we're talking about advice for, you know, anyone else, I do think that it is good to not narrow down so much and kind of have a more broad list and interview and apply to more places, because, you know, an institution could really surprise you that you didn't think that you would love. So that is something that if I had to go back, I would definitely change. So that would be my advice to you guys, is to kind of keep a more open, broad mind on that. And out of the 4 places that I applied, I got 3 interviews. So I did get rejected from one institution, which I think is very, very normal considering how many applications there are out there. So I was rejected by one, and then I had 3 interviews. I have a whole interview episode that kind of goes into a lot of details about that, so I won't really touch upon that now. But I did have the 3 interviews, and then I remember kind of really struggling with the match itself, because 2 of them were very similar, and then one was very, very AmCare focused. And kind of determining how I was going to rank those was really hard for me. And I know, just talking from, you know, students this year or friends, that they kind of also had the same struggles. And what I will say that I know now that I didn't necessarily know last year is that, you know, as a program, you kind of have those same struggles. So everyone really does tell you to rank based on how you would want to be there, like based on your top list. Like if this place is your first choice, put them as first. And it's really the same thing from an institution perspective, because I don't know what any of the candidates are thinking. Let's say I'm the residency program director. You know, I don't know what any of them are thinking. We may love them, but maybe they love another hospital more. And it's kind of the same thing as an applicant where, you know, you love the program, but you don't know what the residency program director or the preceptors are thinking. You know, it may seem like they love you, but maybe, you know, they've had a bunch of students and they're going to rank them above you. There's really like, it's just this weird, confusing thing where no one really knows what's going to happen. No one knows what the other side is thinking. Literally, all you know is how you feel and where you want to be. And on both of the sides of the aisles, it's hard. And I didn't necessarily see that as a candidate last year. So I'm glad that I have had that perspective now, kind of being on the other side of it. But you know, at the end of the day, you really need to go with your gut and, you know, where you would want to be and kind of stick with that. It's very easy. And, you know, I'm guilty of doing this, but I don't think that it was productive at all. It's very easy to say, oh, you know, I should have ranked this way, or I wish I did that, or, you know, I wish this, what if this, it's not productive. It's really not. And if you question yourself and how you rank, it really can just absolutely eat you alive. Again, we'll talk about phase two in a second because there's a lot to talk about. But you really, in terms of ranking, you just have to go with your gut and stay true to yourself and what you want the most, and know that at the end of the day, whatever is meant to happen for you will happen. And I think that that's kind of the number one thing that you need to keep in your mind while kind of like mentally preparing for match day, is knowing that whatever is meant to happen to you is going to happen to you, and there's a reason for everything. And if you kind of try and focus on that, then it really does relieve some of the stress and pressure. But it is good to mentally prepare, because I remember, you know, my preceptor at the time saying, you know, well, what if you don't match? Or, you know, a lot of the times, you know, really good candidates still don't match and blah, blah, blah. And she almost was like psyching me up to, you know, like get ready for it. And at the time I just didn't want to hear any of it. And, you know, maybe I should have mentally prepared more, because I truly was pretty blindsided. So I don't think that it is bad to quote unquote mentally prepare for match day. But that doesn't mean that you should think negatively either, right? Because you put so much time and effort into the application process, or probably years worth of school, you know, and volunteering and extracurriculars to be a good residency candidate. So, you know, it's not something that you have to go into it thinking that you're not going to match. But it's just good to, you know, kind of mentally be prepared for anything, because again, you know, the whole matching system, you just never really know. And it's kind of the same thing with having a backup plan. You know, they're not bad, but again, you know, those probably take a lot of time too. So for me, and someone who absolutely had my heart set on doing a residency, I had no backup plan at the time. And I don't think that that is necessarily bad, because I mean, you do find out about the match in March, you know, you do have a good amount of time before graduation to, you know, kind of set up another job or go through phase two, etc. So again, I don't think you need to think that negatively about the whole, you know, residency application process itself, or, you know, absolutely have this solid backup plan or plan B, etc. Especially if you are someone who is die hard over a residency. If you really aren't someone who's die hard over a residency, and you're open to it, but you're also open to other things, then I think it makes a lot more sense for that type of person to have a backup plan. But again, I was not mentally prepared not to match, one, and two, I definitely didn't have a backup plan. And my preceptor had actually given me the day off from rotation, which, you know, at the time I thought was, you know, nice and convenient, but I didn't think I would truly, truly need it, which obviously I did. So why don't we just fast forward to match day? So match day comes and my boyfriend and I are both home because we, you know, both kind of were told like, oh, you know, wake up, get, look at your emails, you know, come in later, blah, blah, blah. So we actually opened up his email first because we were both kind of mentally prepared for him not to match for some reason, and not really mentally prepared for me not to match. So, you know, he opens up his email. It's good news. We're both so happy. And I open mine up, and just advice for anyone, if you want a quick answer, if you do not see big, bold congratulation letters, it's not good. So I remember just staring at this email like, this doesn't look right. What is this? And I just like was so blinded. Like I blacked out. I don't know. But I read it like 3 times. And then I just remember freaking out. And the look on my boyfriend's face was like priceless. Like he was so like, what do I do? Because like literally neither one of us were prepared for this. And honestly, full disclosure, I spent the entire day crying. Like literally the entire day I was crying. And honestly, if you need a good cry, just let it out. Take your time to grieve. It's a long process, especially if you're someone like me who prepared for it for 3 or 4 years. Like, it takes a lot out of you. And then to get a no, you know, it hurts. And again, I cried all day long. I'm not going to, like, lie to you guys about that and say, oh, I was fine. You know, I picked up the pieces right away and I was a champ about it. Like, I really wasn't for the first day. I truly, truly was not. So if you need to take your time to grieve, by all means, do that. I will say that night I went out and I got a Caesar salad and pizza and a margarita, and I felt pretty good about that. But honestly, one of the things that made me feel the best, and if you were someone who was following me last year, then you probably remember me posting about the match day and the fact that I did not match, and all of the love and the support that was flooding in just made me feel so much better about everything. You know, not only from people who were in the same boat as I was that year, but from people who were in the same boat, you know, a few years ago, and they were telling me their story and how, you know, they either matched in phase two or they never ended up matching and they got this incredible other job. So it really was like a very, very empowering thing for me to be able to post that and get that kind of feedback. It really helped me through the process. So I encourage you guys to share about it and talk about it and, you know, not have it be like this taboo thing that you have to hide that like, oh, I didn't match, because so many students are not going to match. You know, the statistics are crazy and I didn't even know them. At the time, my boyfriend actually showed me them to try and help me feel better, which it kind of did because it made me realize that I was not alone. So if anyone is, you know, needing some encouragement right now, go read that post, go read the comments. They're incredible and uplifting and really, truly just make you feel like you're not alone. And one of the reasons that I think I have always been okay with not matching in phase one was that, you know, I value this platform so much. I value, you know, being able to have a podcast or a blog and, you know, having the followers that I do, because, you know, the whole point behind it is helping others and helping you guys. And the fact that I did not match in phase one helped way more people than it hurt me. And I know I grew a lot from it, but I know that I also was able to reach out and touch so many of you guys and help you through that as well. So, you know, if that was God's plan for me to do that and be kind of that avenue and that voice for it, then by all means, you know, I'm here for it and I welcome it. And, you know, I'm never gonna like hide my failures from you guys or anything like that. I think everything is a growing process. But again, my phase one match results day advice, if it doesn't go well, you know, take the time you need to grieve about it and mourn, you know, that loss, because it kind of is, right? You know, you spend all this time on that. But I will say, you know, take a day or two or whatever you need. But if residency is truly, truly where you see yourself, you need to get back up. You know, I will say that phase two is hard. It's a very quick process. And, you know, you do have to pay again for your applications. You do have to make, you know, new letters of intent, most likely, if you're applying to new places, which I know I was, etc. And now the chances of matching are even lower because there's only a couple places with spots left and, you know, there's so many students. And I am actually super excited to announce to you guys that I am doing a really, really fun episode with Tony Guerra, all about phase two advice. So stay tuned for that. I am putting, you know, everything phase two related into that besides my advice for, I think, who should apply to phase two, because I do think that that is important just to kind of broadly cover. Because again, there is a lot of work that goes into it. You have to pay again. You know, it's kind of really, in my eyes, what I see it for is those people who are really, really, really committed to residency. If you got your match result and you're kind of like, oh, well, you know, I tried, but that's okay. I have a backup plan, or, you know, that's okay. You know, I kind of just became interested in residency, etc. But if you're someone who opened it and you were absolutely heartbroken and didn't know what to do with yourself and only see yourself going into a residency and feel like that is the best path for you, then absolutely, again, stand back up taller this time, get your applications in, do the work, and, you know, go for that phase two match. I apologize if this episode just kind of, you know, took a deep dive towards depression. I'm not meaning for it to be that way, but obviously, you know, match day was hard for me, and, you know, it may be hard for some of you going forward this year in 2020, but I want to wish you all the absolute best of luck, you know, whether you match or not. I know that there are such amazing things in store for you, you know, whether it is, you know, what you initially set out for or had your heart set on, it's going to be amazing no matter what. I think every single person's journey to a great career is so different, and we would be really foolish to kind of think that they're all going to align and we're all going to have the same paths. You know, there's a million different paths to having a great, rewarding pharmacy career. So again, do not feel discouraged by anything. Know yourself and know what you've been working for and where your true passion lies and, you know, what you want to go for. Again, congratulations to everyone who matches and knows their plans for next year. You know, and I'm behind all of you who do not match and are kind of looking either at phase two or jobs, and I support you and am so proud of you too. So, you know, this time is really just all about celebrating you and everything you've been through and everything you've worked for. So whether you match or not on the 13th, you know, it's not an unlucky day. It's not Friday the 13th. It is your day, good or bad. You know, it's going to be a day that truly kind of defines where you go from here, right? So, you know, take it for what it is and, you know, let it empower you and lead you to the next, you know, part of your career. And for those of you who do not match and do want to pursue phase two or are just interested in more of phase two stuff, then stay tuned for my episode with Tony Guerra.
That's all for this episode of the Lux Pharmacist Podcast. Be sure to share this podcast on your social media networks, and let's reach more innovative pharmacists with a flair for style, a creative approach to life, and a passion for patient care. Learn more. Check out theluxpharmacist.com.